You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is the CHGO Cubs podcast presented by PointsBet. Use code CHGO when you sign up to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. Hello, everyone. My name is Corey. I am joined once again by Dr. Brendan Miller.
Wow.
We are coming to you on Sunday, May 15th, after the Cubs, Brendan, finish up a series win in Arizona.
They did.
Which also means they had a winning West Coast
they
road
did.
Trip.
So I guess the takeaway here is to not have me on this podcast. When I don't record, they go to the West Coast and they win series. So I think that's what we've concluded here.
That is a very strong...
So this will be my last podcast. No.
Yeah, you're the data man. Tell me about the correlation of that, because it's pretty strong.
Yeah, but no, that was fun. It's good to see the team playing well. You're getting performances by so many different guys on the team. So it was fun to see the team have some semblance of success that I and you have not seen for the majority of the year.
Yeah, and it was a similar weekend to a lot that we saw during that stretch where the Cubs were losing the vast majority of these games. Mm-hmm. But all these games were close. They were on the road, and the Cubs found a way to win a couple of them. Two of these games decided by one run, each of the teams winning one, and then the Cubs with a nice two-run victory on Saturday. But yeah, I mean, this was not a week that I think most of us expected to go well, and it really did. So, you know, I know that, you know, you're still looking at the standings and everything, and, you know, it certainly doesn't change a lot of that immediately. But regardless, like, this was a nice week from this team, capped off by a nice competitive series there in Arizona.
Yeah, absolutely. And seeing Seiya back in the lineup, having good at-bats, making some good defensive plays, even seeing Frank Schwindel have some success after that weird brief demotion. It's like, you know, you want to see everyone succeed, but it's still good to see someone like Frank pop back up right away and have some success, right? Have some resilience. And the personality by Frank is, you know, very well respected by the team. So that's just one example. So I'm feeling good, Corey. This might be the first podcast of the season outside of that opening week that I feel good recording after a game. I think this might be the first one that I've recorded after a win. Seriously. So, you know, it feels good.
Yeah, well, and really, we will obviously get into a lot of specifics here. We'll update on some roster stuff that's going on, and we'll talk about some of the really impressive performances that we saw this weekend. But I think the thing that stands out, Brendan, is the starting pitching. Like, this was a weekend where finally we see strong starting pitching, and we didn't get super deep into games, but multiple starts between Smiley and Steele where the guys go six innings and Kyle five and two
almost
thirds.
Almost six, yeah.
Yeah, almost six. Like, this was one of those, like, okay, here comes the rotation, right, like, kind of getting it together and giving us the performances that we've kind of really desperately needed from this group. And especially as Wade Miley has come back, hopefully Marcus Stroman is able to rejoin soon, you start to feel a little better about that group as opposed to where we started the season.
Yeah, no doubt. That was the big problem when you're having guys go three, four, five innings. The bullpen is taxed more. And as a result, perhaps you're seeing guys out of the bullpen have success and getting chances, perhaps in higher leverage situations. We'll get into it this episode, but Scott Efros is an example. He's been used in higher leverage situations because Smiley went six, Kyle almost went six. You had today Steele have his best start as a Cubs starting pitcher, allowing Efros to come in higher leverage situations. So it's giving Ross more flexibility and more areas to test these guys out in higher leverage situations. So there is the starting pitching aspect, and then there is the consequence of that for those in the bullpen.
Yeah, and of course, Cody, Ryan, and I talked about this after the, you know, when we did the series recap after the Padres series ended, but especially down David Robertson, who's been one of your highest leverage relievers. Obviously, you know, obviously we've talked about length from the starters this entire season, but especially when you're down, you know, someone who has been basically your best reliever or one of your best relievers, however you want to categorize that, it makes it that much more important that you're not leaning on the bullpen too much, as we've seen during this season. But let's just run through these games, quick recap to set the table here, and then we will get into the specifics of what we saw from the starting rotation. We'll start there. On Friday, it was a 3-4 loss for the Cubs. This one started by Drew Smiley. Six innings. He does allow 10 hits. The defense wasn't great behind him. Four earned runs, one walk, and four strikeouts. Not the best outing we've seen from Smiley, but he does go six. ERA sitting at 3.64 on the season, Brendan. Like, that's, you know, definitely something you're going to take from a guy who, you know, made it into your rotation after the lockout and what all of, you know, the body of work that we've seen from Drew Smiley throughout this season. The Cubs got their runs in this game on an Ildemar Vargas triple and a Rafael Ortega sac fly. The Cubs did lead this game 3-0, but a big bottom of the third ties the game up for the Diamondbacks. And then, unfortunately, the Cubs lose this one on a wild pitch, which is always a pretty frustrating way to lose a ball game. On Saturday, it was a 4-2 win for the Cubs behind Kyle Hendricks, 5 2/3, five hits, just one run allowed, two walks, and two strikeouts. Started a little shaky for Kyle, but he did settle down, ends up throwing 94 pitches in this game. The Cubs getting their runs in this one. It was the Yan Gomes game, and we will be talking about the tandem of him and Wilson Contreras later on in this episode. He hits his second home run to tie this game at one. He also drives in another on a single in the top of the ninth, the Cubs scoring three times in the top of the ninth to win this one 4-2. And then the finale, as we all saw on Sunday, it was a 3-2 Cubs win. This one behind the best start of Justin Steele's major league career. Six innings, just three hits, just one earned run, two runs allowed, two walks, and 10 strikeouts. Brendan will assuredly be taking us into the pitch lab to break down what Justin Steele was doing. A lot of work from that slider, Brendan. It was particularly nasty today.
Very
he
much,
was
yeah.
locating it quite well. And then the bullpen of Martin, Efros, and Wick combine to shut this one down. Behind him, the Cubs getting their runs on Sunday via a Rafael Ortega leadoff home run on his birthday. So happy birthday to Rafael. Patrick Wisdom with a long home run to make it 2-0. And then the game-winning hit, Brendan, such a baseball thing, right? Mm-hmm. A week ago, Frank Schwindel is sent down for a day, basically. Yep. A week later, game-winning hit for the Chicago Cubs.
Look at that. Look at that.
So that's just how things go sometimes. But That's the series. Again, the Cubs take 2-3 to finish a 4-2 road trip. Very nice little week from the Chicago Cubs as they head back to Wrigley Field on Monday. So let's jump right into the starting pitching. I think we'll talk about Hendricks and maybe a little Smiley because everybody's always hyper-focused on Kyle Hendricks, but the lead of the weekend was the start that we saw from one Justin Steele. And reading a tweet here from Christopher Komka, who is a great stat man for NBC Sports Chicago, and I'm going to pose this to you as a trivia question, Brendan.
Okay.
This was on Sunday, the first 10-strikeout game. First of all, it was the first 10-plus strikeout game from a Cubs starter since Kyle Hendricks in 2020. So that's great. That's a good news, bad news situation right there. But it is the first 10-strikeout game by a Cubs pitcher who was drafted by the Cubs since who, Brendan?
So,
and bonus if you can get the year.
Oh, man. Oh, God. See, this one's tricky because it's not going to be within the last decade, right? So I don't think it's
that. Do you want me to answer that?
No. I'm just thinking out loud, and I feel as if, you know, the early 2000s, that's too long ago and too obvious. Who would that be? So I want to say, and this is, he was not a strikeout pitcher, but there may have been some starts where it happened. Was it Randy Wells?
No.
No. Okay. So I thought I was a little bit like out there, but guess not Randy Wells.
You are too far. You were incorrect in your first assessment.
Too far in the timeline?
Yes. Too far back.
Are you serious?
I am.
Okay. Is it Mark Pryor?
No.
Okay. Is that too early in the timeline?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm looking.
I'm just going to tell you.
No. I get one more. I get one more. You know, Big Z's not drafted, signed internationally.
You're too far back, Brendan.
You got to tell me now. I'm bad at this. Who is it?
May 26th, 2014.
Okay.
Jeff Samardzija.
Is it Jeff Samardzija?
It is.
All right. Well, that makes sense. He had that splitter working back then. So, wow. It's been a long time, though.
And a little bonus tidbit, that was the year that Justin Steele was drafted by the Chicago Cubs. How about that,
you
guys? Look
at that. Coming
things just coming together.
Yeah.
But Brendan, I mean, break this down however you want, but even just watching this one, I mean, especially the way that he was locating that breaking pitch low and outside to left-handed hitters was masterful today. When he was missing, he was missing down low and out enough that it was not leaking over the plate, but he just a ton of beautiful pitches placed outside the zone for those hitters to go and chase. And, you know, really he made like one mistake in this game. He left that one ball up, I think it was to Smith. Or no, maybe it was Varsho. It doesn't matter. Some guy on the Diamondbacks, none of you care about. Yeah. But it was a lefty. He left it just a little too much up and in the zone. I think he was trying to go with the elevated fastball out of the zone to get the strikeout. That was really like the only mistake in this game for Justin Steele, but just a beautiful start.
I mean, really, really nicely done. And so I want to give kind of a timeline of what's changed for Justin since those mid-April starts. So he had that great start in the opening series against Milwaukee, and then since then we knew it was not the best. So in that first start against Milwaukee, he did show a sinker, and he threw a sinker in 6% of his total pitches. But then he went 3 weeks without showing a sinker again, and that was four starts. So 4 starts later, he then shows the sinker and throws it in 5% of his pitches. He went another few starts until he threw a sinker again. And that was last week in his previous start. And he, for the first time that season, threw a sinker in 26% of his total pitches. That is the highest usage of his sinker since last season. And that persisted today. So he threw a sinker in over 20% of his total pitches. And if you were watching closely, his reasoning for throwing sinkers was to go up and in to left-handed batters. And he did that masterfully. That allowed then the slider to work off of that same tunnel. And you saw him get tons of whiffs, and that led to 10 strikeouts. So we were talking about Justin for many episodes. And the sentiment that I was trying to express was, if Steele can't showcase more than two pitches, which for the first month was a four-seam and a slider, he was not able to align those two pitches and their command at all until recently. And the thinking was, and the sentiment that I was saying was, well, this, if he doesn't experiment with these other pitches or develop other pitches, then I don't know if he can even be a starter. And that I think is still a fair assessment. So for him to showcase in the last 2 weeks now slider, four-seam, but also using the sinker once every four pitches, and then still using that curveball once every 10 to 8 pitches, now you have four pitch types. And he did show, not in this start against Arizona, but in the previous start, a changeup a few times. And so within the last week now, he's thrown five different pitch types. And I think these last two starts are markedly better than any start he's had, even going back to later in 2021. So this is encouraging to see. And this is kind of exceeding my own expectations in terms of the immediacy of him having success and him going forward. If he can continue to do this and showcase that command and use these multiple pitch types effectively, then yeah, I think him being a back-of-the-end rotation starter, let's say a four or five starter with potential to be a mid to high leverage swing guy, let's say in a shortened series, like a playoff series, that is so valuable in today's game, Corey. And I know everyone's greedy. They want to see the Cubs produce top of the rotation arms. I'm greedy, and I wish that was the case too. And maybe Justin is able to do that as he continues to develop. But realistically, given what he has, that is a four or five starter value. That is insanely valuable, Corey. So this is a good development. This is really encouraging to see, and another step in the right direction against the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, this was great. I would have to think that this is one of those starts, you know, that Justin is hopefully able to use his momentum and continue going on. But for the Cubs to have a guy that they drafted and developed come up and give you a quality start, giving up just one run in six innings while striking out 10, like, yeah, big ups to Justin Steele on Sunday. That was a really, really great outing. It was fun to watch. One more trivia question for you from Christopher Komka, again, at C Komka on Twitter, about Justin Steele, kind of a follow-up to the first one that, let's remind everyone, you got wrong.
Thanks.
Yeah, Justin Steele is the first Cubs lefty drafted by the Cubs with a 10 strikeout game since whom? And again, bonus points if you get the year.
Lefty
drafted by the Cubs with a 10 strikeout game.
I can't even remember the last lefty to be drafted by the Cubs to start a baseball game. Hold on, let me think about this.
Do you want a hint?
No, I don't want to do hints. That's like cheating. I mean, the only because this is the first name that comes to mind and it's mostly in a negative context, was it Rich Hill?
It was
Rich Hill. All right. That's the last Cubs lefty to start, other than now, that I remember. So, all right.
You redeemed yourself. I did. August 22nd, 2007.
Ooh, look at
that.
There
you go. Yeah. A lot of fun trivia today.
Yeah.
So that is Justin Steele, really great outing. So, you know, that's also one where, you know, now you really look forward to seeing him get on the bump the next time to see if he can kind of continue that success, keep it rolling. But let's talk about Kyle Hendricks. Not his best start, but, you know, I think this was a fine start, five hits. And again, settled down after it looked like it might be a troubling night for him with the command. Only goes 5 2/3 with 94 pitches. But what did you see from Kyle? This, of course, is following a really strong outing in the one before this. So what did you see here in Arizona?
Yeah, Kyle had a different mode of attack against the Diamondbacks, probably due to the lefty-righty versatility of the Diamondbacks lineup. But against the Diamondbacks, he threw mostly four-seam fastballs. So he threw 94 total pitches. 34 of those were four-seamers. And then he led in his secondary pitch usage with the changeup, unsurprisingly, with 26 total changeups. And then his third most used pitch was the sinker. So in the previous start, he led his total pitch usage with changeups, and then he threw sinkers. And in this start, it was very much reverse in terms of him leading with the four-seam and then using the changeup and sinker to complement that four-seam. And he's actually been spiking up his four-seam usage over these last few starts and specifically this year compared to last year. And that's just something to keep monitoring. He did express higher confidence with the four seam after his last successful start. So it just might be something that him and Yan Gomes are finding success in, or it could be something that him and the pitching infrastructure, whether it be with Hadavi or Moskos, is pinpointing as an area of potential success for Kyle. He did throw 14 curveballs, so that usage is still being higher than in years past, and he did have success. Now, the whiffs weren't there against the Diamondbacks, but he was able to settle down after a few so-so innings to start the game with some poor command, and then he did redeem himself and go almost six innings. So I think it was another encouraging start from Kyle. The one area for improvement against the Diamondbacks, if you look at his zone profile, he left a lot of changeups up in the zone. I mean, I'm looking right now, just counting. He left about six changeups above the belt inside, which is uncharacteristic to what we've seen from Kyle in years past. So the command was maybe not as sharp, but the four seam was really effective, and the changeup, when located properly, was doing what it needed to be to do. So I think it's another encouraging step. Still room for improvement, but it's good to see Kyle have some success here in the last few weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think the real takeaway for me on the weekend, you know, again, like Drew Smyly gave up a lot of hits, probably less so if the defense was better behind him, but just a much nicer weekend from the starting rotation. I think that's the takeaway. If you can get some stability there, it heightens the ability of David Ross to utilize that bullpen more effectively, and some of the weapons that we've seen develop in that bullpen that we'll talk about later here. It makes everything so much easier for this team. And especially when you look at how, like, the San Diego series and a lot of the series the Cubs have played going into this series that also played out this way with the Diamondbacks, like, so many close games. Right? Like, and the way that this team is going to be able to win more of those games is by the starters making things a little easier on David Ross. Then he's able to utilize the bullpen kind of like he did on Sunday, even with Robertson out, and go to his most effective guys in a very close game. And you try to get, you just try to scratch one across with this offense, right? If the offense is still not performing at the level you really need or want, but in two of these games, they did just enough, right? And if you aren't getting that length from the rotation, it's a lot harder to succeed in such close games when you're relying on five, six relievers a game, or you're sending everybody out there for multiple innings just to cover all those pitches. Like, this just really rounds everything into shape.
Okay, quick break here from our sponsor, PointsBet. The best way to support CHGO is to download the PointsBet app and use code CHGO when you sign up. If you make a $50 or more first-time deposit, you will receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, and you'll even get a free shirt of your choice from the CHGO locker. If you have any questions, email pointsbet@allchgo.com, and we'll help you out. Remember, that's PointsBet is your home for live in-game betting. They even have a new exclusive feature, live NBA same game parlay. For the first time ever, build the perfect live same game parlay only with PointsBet. Combine your favorite bets anytime during the game. You can even boost your live same game parlays, and now online sign up is available in Illinois. You can actually download the PointsBet app right now and register your account from start to finish, all from your phone. Signing up with the fastest sports book is now easier than ever, so you can start living your bet life in seconds. Again, use code CHGO to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. So what are you waiting for? Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet life with PointsBet. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700.
And of course, we appreciate all your support for everything going on at CHGO podcasts and live shows on every team every day. Post-game shows and premium written content for all members when you sign up at allchgo.com. You get a free shirt and access to the members-only Discord when you become a member. So don't forget to sign up at allchgo.com. That is, of course, where you will get all the fine work from our guy, Ryan Herrera. And when he is not there, our other guy, Jared Willis, who fills in for him. And, Brendan, so With Hendricks, I want to talk about Yan Gomes a little bit. And we saw, you know, of course, the Yan Gomes game on Saturday where he hits a homer, drives in a run. But this is now the second start where we have seen Gomes work with Hendricks, and Kyle really, really strong in his praise of Yan Gomes, and specifically the sequencing that Yan Gomes is calling back there, the way he is reading the swings of the opposing hitters, and of course using that information to decide on the next pitch and how to attack these hitters. And also just the way on after the start in this Diamondbacks, Kyle said after the game, you know, talking about how Yan was sort of calming him down and talking to him and really giving him a good mindset when the command was off or when things weren't exactly clicking early in the start. Like he said, he leaned on Gomes and really appreciated having him back there. So always interesting when you know, someone like Hendricks, who has been in the league for so long and worked with so many catchers, is pretty strong in his praise of the work someone is doing.
Yeah, I took notice of that too, especially after that Padre start where he almost went the complete game. He was so expressive, liking Yan catching him. And you're right. I did think that was a point of emphasis from Kyle, especially when it came to sequencing. And the words that Kyle used about Yan reading swings really stood out to me. And this is not to contrast Wilson Contreras directly, because Yan Gomes is that veteran. He has caught former Cy Young winners. He's well-respected around the league, well-respected by managers. And there's a reason why the Cubs paid a lot of money to bring Yan into this team. So that point being that Yan was reading swings and getting Kyle comfortable, I thought deserved attention. And we were talking offline. I made the comment, I wonder if Yan will continue to catch Kyle and maybe align Wilson's off days with Kyle pitching. Again, this is not to say like, oh, Wilson sucks at calling games and his sequencing is bad and Kyle struggles are due to Wilson, but it is interesting and perhaps a trend worth following that maybe Yan will start catching Kyle more often in an actual scheduled manner. And you can see, I mean, I'm watching the game against the Padres and I can see everything is clicking like off each pitch in the changeup being used more than any other pitch type against the Padres was also a signal to me that Yan was really going with what was working. And Kyle has thrown changeups as his dominant pitch in several starts, both this year and in years past. So it's not like a huge rarity per se, but it's just, it's interesting that in Yan's first start, he went with a changeup exclusively.
Yeah, and I also want to read this stat from Andy Martinez from over at Marquee Sports Network. This was coming into the game on Sunday, so Gomes pinch hits, goes 0 for 1, and then Wilson was 0 for 3, I believe, with a hit by pitch. And the stat was that only the Dodgers have a higher OPS from their catching position than the Cubs do. And Cody and Ryan and I talked about this when we were on after the Padres series, talking about how we were all super pleased with that signing. You know, Brendan, I know you have been railing on that for years with them not, you know, addressing the backup position in a sufficient enough way. But it's very nice when you talk about something like that during the offseason. You see the intention with the front office and when they made the move, and you really see it playing out. We were talking on after the Padres series about how it was sort of maybe partially the part of the reason that Wilson was having such a resurgent season on offense. But then you look at the Cubs catching position as a whole, and then what we just talked about, where you have someone like Kyle Hendricks just absolutely thrilled at the work that Yan is doing in terms of receiving and calling a game. It's just nice when a move has a clear intention and it just seems to be working swimmingly, Brendan.
Yeah, it's interesting because against the Diamondbacks too, again, they faced mostly, or he faced mostly a left-handed lineup, but you can clearly see the intention by Kyle. So against lefties, Kyle threw no sinkers below the belt, none. And looking here, he threw about 7 dozen pitches, it looks like. The majority of those were four-seams. And then you used the changeup off of that four-seam location. And some of those four-seams, Corey, were thrown down and away to left-handed batters. Not all of them were thrown up in the zone. And Kyle has talked about using that low and away fastball in order for his changeup to work off of that. And it's interesting how the sinker wasn't really used that much against lefties in this case. So my thinking is, what if Yan early on in the game was seeing that there weren't the best swings against these fastballs or even the best takes, just the body language by these batters? And I never have thought about that from a catcher. You always think about just calling good pitches and sequencing appropriately, but you do wonder if there is a legitimate skill, and there likely is, of these catchers reading body language and bad swings and using that extensive knowledge base to the pitcher's benefit. And when you have a veteran like Yan match a veteran like Kyle, who have seen so many batters over the years in World Series, in high leverage games, this is a relationship that appears to be booming, Corey. I don't know. I want to see more of it. It's so early to see, but I'm encouraged. I think it could help Kyle kind of get out of that early season funk, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, it's just hard not to be really pleased with the way that this is going, and especially the one thing we didn't even mention, and we talked about Wilson's like offense, but just keeping him fresh, right? And that's so important. It's been so important over the years, and obviously when Gomes is playing the way that he is on the whole, it makes all of that a lot easier and just takes the pressure off of Wilson and hopefully will allow him to continue to have the best offensive season of his career, which is great.
Yeah.
I want to stay on the real positives and just some of the stuff that's going really well here. Scott Efros, Brendan.
Amazing.
Is filthy.
Filthy.
He is absolutely filthy. And I talked about this with Cody and Ryan the other day and how he's, you know, getting the pitching ninja treatment basically every time he's out there. Like I think the pitching ninja, Rob Friedman, has a notification up or something for when Efros is in the game because you just know it's going to be absolute filth. But another weekend from Efros where we just continue to see, like, the Cubs really seem to have a dude on their hands. So he goes just a third of an inning in the game on Saturday, gets a strikeout, and then in the game on Sunday, he actually picks up his first win of the season, goes an inning, just one hit, no walks, no runs, and a strikeout. His ERA, Brendan, sits at 1.20 on the season. And you look at, you know, you're talking about like Yan Gomes and his ability to like read swings and stuff. Like with Efros, it's pretty easy. Like you see some swings that are just super off balance and ugly. And clearly, like, these guys are just all over the place. But Scott Efros leaves the game on Sunday, Brendan, 17 strikeouts, one walk.
Amazing.
What else can you even say? But what I'm going to ask you to say is, you know, how is he doing it? Like, what are we looking at here?
Efros is unique. You're not going to find any pitcher like Efros in the league. So because of that, these hitters are not going to be familiar with that type of pitching. Efros is unique in that release point. I mean, it's obvious once you see him pitch. But then when you match that release point with the actual quote-unquote new age Statcast metrics, those metrics are also way better than what you typically see from a pitcher, even with that arm angle. So if you look at, for example, Efros's slider, the vertical approach angle on this pitch, which is just a term that defines the angle at which the ball crosses the plate. Think about it as launch angle, but for a pitcher. So this particular slider will cross home plate with a steeper angle than 95% of pitchers, Corey. That is absurd. So that means most of these hitters, when they see Efros's slider, they've never seen a pitch like that ever. When you combine the release point, then the vertical approach angle, and then the type of spin axis it has. But then his four-seam fastball and his sinker, Those two pitches are also unique. His four-seam fastball, because of that release point and because of the spin that he has in that pitch, it actually kind of moves like a sinker, Corey, which is also bizarre. And that allows some of those nasty changeup swings and misses we've seen that the pitching ninja will tweet out. So Efrost is quite literally turning into a higher leverage reliever. Now, we need to see this continue. We need to see the command stay sharp. And it's too early to say that, hey, you have Efrost being a bona fide high leverage reliever, but he has the stuff behind the pitch metrics to back this up. And he has that attitude. I was listening to Ian Happ's podcast and Dakota Mekis talk about just the attitude that Scott Efrost has. He has a no BS attitude. Like, you don't want to be by him, like, in the dugout, because he's so animated and so focused. And that is what you want from a guy who wants to strike out and lock down a game in the eighth or ninth inning. So the numbers are there. The results are there. You saw Ross use him again, even in his attempt in a multi-inning role to close out Sunday's game. Corey, this is fun to see. And I don't want to get too ahead of myself, because we've seen high Statcast number guys like Tommy Nance, for example, kind of fade away. Although that was, I think fair at this point to assume that was sticky substance mediated. But with Efrost, I'm really optimistic here, Corey. Like, I'm so much optimistic that I'm a little scared that he's going to let me down a little bit. But it's exceptional and fun to see.
Yeah, I mean, and worth noting, too, the one hit that he gave up on Sunday in his inning of work was in the rollover. So he came back out to start the ninth, gave up the hit, and then David Ross went to Rowan Wick. So he, you know, probably could have just had a clean inning and called it a great weekend. But there's just something, Brendan, like, especially because it's not something that we're super familiar with, at least in the, you know, recent memory.
What, good
pitchers? Like, I want to drive this home, like, what we really saw on Sunday from the Cubs, right? Like, whatever your excitement level is for this team or this season, like, that notwithstanding, right? What we saw from the Cubs on Sunday was 6 innings and 10 strikeouts from a homegrown starting pitcher, and that also included a clean inning of work for a homegrown reliever who in 16 games and I think 15 innings of work has a 1.2 ERA with, as I read before, a 17-1 strikeout to walk ratio. Let that settle in for
absurd.
A second. Like, that's
absurd.
Big stuff.
Yeah.
When we're talking about this season and what makes it a success, even with where our expectations were coming in, performances like that are what are going to get us to that point.
No doubt. And you want to see not only Efrost continue to do this, but you want to see when Robertson comes back, him doing this. And when Roberts is ticking, doing this consistently. And Rowan Wick, who has looked good, and he closed out that game against the Diamondbacks on Sunday, continued to look this good. And this is why you have that confidence in the pitching infrastructure and the pitch lab to make sure this bullpen is valuable. Now, that needs to be applied towards the rotation, guys, and that is a point of criticism, which is valid. But you see the potential of those types of guys in place identifying pitchers with unique numbers like Scott Efrost. And you see the utility of pitchers like him that allows Ross then to use other guys in different roles. So as we talked about earlier, it has consequences beyond the pitcher himself, Corey. And you listing off those numbers in Sunday's win, you know, you don't hear that often with this Cubs team. And you haven't heard that in years with this Cubs team. So you have to be encouraged and at the very least intrigued by what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Intrigued for sure, right? Like, we'll time will tell on encouraged, right? Like, we want to see more from these guys. But you should definitely, you know, be intrigued. And I do just want to, before we head into our last sponsor break here, and then we'll talk, there's a lot of moving pieces on the roster, guys coming back, hitting the IL, etc. So we'll get into a lot of that. I do want to, again, highlight the job that Rowan Wick has done, because I think that that's not something to gloss over. He got into a little trouble in the game on Saturday, but he does pick up his third save there. Walks a guy, gives up two hits, but he does strike out three in the inning of work. And then he comes back to close out the game on Sunday, picking up his fourth save then, gives up just a hit, no walks, no strikeouts. But, you know, again, this is a guy with an ERA sitting at 1.32 on the season, Brendan, and the velo looks good, the stuff looks good, his execution looks good. This is another in a line of things where, you know, he had had some injuries, some inconsistent performances, but for him to come back and show us that he can be a back-end, high-leverage reliever, big deal.
Big deal. His numbers back it up, too. So you have the average exit velo by WHIP better than 90% of pitchers. His strikeout rate is also better than 85% of pitchers. So he's not only limiting the amount of contact, but when contact is even made, it's very weak. And there was an out in that ninth inning against the Diamondbacks on Sunday that speaks to the example of why Rowan Wick is good. And Rowan Wick has exceptional carry on his four-seam fastball, which was one of the reasons why Hadavi decided to implement that spike curveball with Rowan Wick years ago, because it just goes off in that same type of tunnel and that same type of spin axis. But in Sunday's game, he threw a four-seam up in the zone. It wasn't really well commanded, to be honest, but it was interesting because a pop-up was induced. And a pop-up was induced because that four-seam does have above-average carry on that. And you can see why Wick is successful, and it does point to the evidence when we talk about this pitch lab being encouraging and valuable in identifying how pitchers like Wick can be good. And this also reminds me of too, like, not every pitcher that the Cubs acquire is going to turn into a valuable guy. And you can think of examples in years past where that is the case, and you can think of examples where, you know, many guys did fade away. And it's not to say that even some of these pitch peripherals that we always list off is reason to unequivocally project these guys being good. That's never the intention. The intention is to pinpoint why these guys might be good, might as in being the key word there. And then you watch the progress, you watch what they're doing with those pitch types, and you follow the journey to hopefully seeing them be successful. And you have an idea of why they might be successful. That's always been the intention. I just want to point that out because, you know, some guys may not be successful. Daniel Norris may not be successful, but it's still interesting when someone like Daniel Norris develops a sweeping breaking pitch for the first time. I think that is worth following. It's not to say he's going to be successful, but it's just it's a point of emphasis there. Okay, so another break here from our sponsor PointsBet. If you enjoy CHGO, one way to help us continue to grow is to download the PointsBet app and use code CHGO when you sign up. Not only are you going to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000, but if you make a $50 or more first-time deposit, you will receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, and you'll even get a free shirt of your choice from the CHGO locker. If you have any questions, email pointsbet@allchgo.com and we'll help you out. And in case you missed it, online signup is available in Illinois. You can download the PointsBet app right now and register your account from start to finish, all from your phone. You'll be signing up with the fastest sports book that's easier than ever, so you can start living your bet life in seconds. So what are you waiting for? Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet life with PointsBet. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700.
All right, Brendan, let's get into some of the housekeeping here for what we saw this weekend. Okay. So firstly, in the good news category, Seiya Suzuki back in the starting lineup, so that is good to see. Goes 1-for-4 in the game on Saturday, and then 1-for-3 with a double that in a lot of parks would have been a nice home run. He also walks in this game. He had some really nice plays in the outfield in that game on Sunday. So that's just good to see. Glad to have Seiya back and in that starting lineup.
Yeah, it's good to see. He made some exceptional plays defensively. And it reminds me of too, I tweeted about this, but Seiya's body control, Corey, kind of a weird thing to describe, but he is so intentional and effortless in the movements that he makes that it does remind me of Javi Baez. Not in the, you know, the magician type performances, but in the ability just to control his body mechanics. And you see that even as he goes through his at-bats and his progression and his thinking process, it's refreshing to see. He had success, he had base hits, he had good plate appearances, a good approach, he looks comfortable in right field, running the bases, looking pretty good. It's good to see. And now you want to see that early success come up a little bit more often. He has been going through some funks here, but as that plate approach continues to be consistent, which it has been, the results are going to come. We're going to see more base hits, more power, driving the ball more, those walks continuing to happen as the season goes along here. And I continue to be really impressed beyond my expectations for Seiya going into the year.
Yeah, and I liked seeing that the run-saving diving catch that he made in the game on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Just as a reminder, he won a lot of defensive awards when he was playing in Japan. So that's, we've seen him play good defense, but I don't think we've seen a ton of like whoa type plays to start his career here. But it is a good reminder that he can make them. Like, he's a very good defender, and for as excited as we have been about what we've seen on offense, you know, again, he's going to go through some slumps and some adjustments and things like that, but for as excited as we were about that part of his game, like, he's just a really good baseball player. Like, he's a very good all-around baseball player who is going to show us and provide value in a number of ways, not just with the bat. So in addition to Seiya coming back, the Cubs do place Nico Hoerner on the 10-day IL. It is retroactive to May 12th with that right ankle sprain. Always really great. You weren't on here when Cody and Ryan and I talked about it, but I can only imagine your reaction to learn that Nico had been hurt by an umpire.
It would not have been happy.
Yeah, really, really awesome stuff to have your starting shortstop in a really strong year and start to the year get hurt because an umpire can't be bothered to pay attention.
By an umpire. Like, your job is supposed to be watching the game. Like, turn around.
Really awesome.
Turn around.
Just awesome stuff. Yeah. Everybody, I think I speak for all of the CHGO Cubs crew when we say we're really, really thrilled about that development, if you can't tell by all of our tones when we talk about it. Anderson Simmons activated. He did get in the game on Sunday as a defensive replacement. He's not going to, we talked about him a lot. Like, he's not going to do a lot for you with the bat, but with a lot of the infield defense that we've seen. Vargas ended up making a nice play in this game to save a hit for Justin Steele, but the Diamondbacks do score a run. That's the unearned run on Steele's line today because Vargas couldn't field a ground ball cleanly.
No, can't do it.
So you're glad to have Simmons here. That should clean up a lot of that stuff. It should make things a little easier. And as we've talked about relentlessly, like, this pitching staff is going to generate a ton of ground balls. You need to have clean defense, especially on that left side, to go along with Patrick Wisdom, who always plays a very nice third base. The other update is that Clint Frazier is expected to begin a rehab start. So that is good news. Yep. You know, he hadn't really gotten going, Brendan, when he was up to start the season, but we saw some good stuff from him in the spring, and obviously he was one of those guys who no guarantee he was going to be good or have success or anything, but it was certainly worth finding out, and he will begin a rehab game on Tuesday with AAA Iowa. The report from Megan Montemuro this morning was that he would need about 5 games in targeting that Cincinnati series next week for his return. So that should be good to get him back, and that is a lot of the roster stuff. So moving pieces here.
Yeah, and you want to see Clint come back and have success right away, if for anything, because he won't be a free agent until 2025. So he fits that type of discussion we've been having with why you want to see more of Alfonso Rivas. And those guys with team control, in my mind, at least right now, should be getting the majority of the plate appearances. And if they don't work out, they don't work out. That's fine. But you can find value for them and roles for them, even if they're not starters. And that in and of itself is valuable when you're trying to build a long-term roster and save money here or there. And that was the intent with David Bodie years ago. Coming up, having success in 2018, seeing the changes that he made that at the time appear to be sustainable in a way that made the front office decide to give Bodie $15 million over 4 years and buy out those arbitration years. So there is value to this. And for Frazier, I hope when he does come back, I want to see him. I want to see him the majority of the time. I don't know how that will play out from a defensive alignment positioning. I don't know what that means for Frank Schwindel, who has had some success in this series after being demoted a week ago. I don't know what that means, but in my mind, Ross has to find a way to get Clint's bat in that lineup the majority of the time, however that works.
Yeah, again, like you just want to see what you have there. And Rafael Ortega has had some better games as of recent. He's turned it on a little bit, had a nice weekend here in Arizona. Obviously, you know, on Sunday with the leadoff home run, but, you know, still sitting at a 670 OPS. Jason Hayward has certainly struggled, 552 OPS.
Do you think he will get DFA this year at some point, Hayward?
Jason?
Yeah.
Seriously. I doubt it. I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah. I mean, don't think so either.
Yeah, I just doubt it. And as we've talked about, it's a tough spot, I think, for the front office when you have several other guys who are not performing. You know, I think it makes it more difficult for them to make that decision. And that actually brings us to, you know, someone I do want to touch on just at least a little bit, and kind of why hopefully Nico's not out too long. But as we talked about earlier this week, like, you want him to be out as long as he needs to be 100%, right? It doesn't seem like a particularly significant injury. I think he was out there doing at least some stuff on Sunday, pregame in Arizona. But he's too important. His development is too important. So take all the time you need. Hopefully that's not a long time. But Simmons you want back. I'm not sure what they're going to do at second base every day, you know, especially while Madrigal is still out. But Jonathan Villar, Brendan, like, kind of quietly, maybe, he had really good numbers against Kyle Freeland going into that start where they faced him on the road in Colorado. And he backed that up, right? He apparently needs to face Kyle Freeland every night because he has been horrible, yeah. Brendan. I certainly was noticing this as time was going on, but I would not have guessed that it was this bad. He has been one of the worst players in baseball, Brendan. Yes. He has a 52 WRC plus. Always as a reminder, 100 is league average, so that is significantly below, and would represent one of the worst numbers that we have seen from anybody you're thinking of in the past several years. Like, this would be one of the worst numbers. And right now, he has a negative 0.7 wins above replacement, which if you looked at qualified players, which he has not played enough to fit that description right now, he would be tied as one of the worst players in baseball. So
great.
Yeah, it's not great. And as a lot of people have pointed out on social media, he doesn't really look to be in the best shape. He was previously a guy who speed and, like, stealing bases and, you know, that kind of, like, flat sprint speed was part of his game. That doesn't really appear to be the case. We've seen some of the miscues on defense. And really why I'm even getting into this is, as I said, Anderson Simmons certainly isn't exciting, especially on offense, but he should clean up some of this stuff.
VR, his outs above average defensive value, worst in baseball. His barrel percentage, worst in baseball. His sprint speed, worst in 65% of runners. That is remarkable, Corey. He stole last season 14 bases. In the previous year, in the COVID shortened season, in that scaled sample, stole 16. It was just 3 years ago he stole 40 bases. And now his sprint speed is in the 35th percentile?
Yeah.
That sucks, man.
He got thrown out on a ground ball in the game on Sunday that, you know, the camera panned to the left side. And I think the shortstop for the Diamondbacks, like, bobbled it a little, and I thought, oh, for sure, he was out. And I was like, what?
It's just, it's weird, and the expectation going into this season was that he could be maybe a platoon partner with Patrick Wisdom. Remember those conversations?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he was, at least last year, equally valuable against lefties and righties. at a rate of a 320 weighted on base average against both those pitchers. So it's frustrating because this is yet again another season where you don't quite have that infield depth. And with Simmons, you did not expect the depth, you expected the defense, and hopefully that does turn out to be the case. But with VR, you expected more than what you signed Simmons for. You expected VR to play every infield position, third base, shortstop, second base, with proficiency. You expected him to be a potential platoon partner for multiple guys that can give Ross flexibility to use different outfielders even, to maybe even use Wisdom in left field if he wants to. But VR at this point has been unusable. I mean, he has the worst numbers from a peripheral standpoint and a value standpoint in Major League Baseball, Corey, and he has a contract for $6 million. It's not to, you know, bag on him. I'm sure he's not intentionally trying to be this bad, and I'm sure he feels awful because of this.
Yeah.
But I feel awful because of this too, and it's I'm cringing watching him play baseball.
Well, and it's just one of those things where, like, sometimes you bring guys in and, you know, maybe they don't perform to the level that you want, but you try to let them figure it out, things like that. Like, the issue, and I think why we're talking about it, is he has been that bad.
I mean, terrible.
It's that bad. I mean, again, you're talking about someone with some of the worst numbers on both sides of the game in baseball. Like, that's tough, you know, and is tough for Ross to, a lot of guys are hurt. So it's a tough position for Ross. He doesn't obviously control the entire roster, but that's a tough spot to put him in where you need guys out there. And especially you only have a certain number of guys that play each position, but one of them has been really, really bad. So I want to also, just worth noting, because we talked about it, you know, he's obviously had some ups and downs, and it was a rough first two games for Patrick Wisdom, but nice to see Patrick with a 2-for-4 game and a long home run in the game on Sunday. But before we preview this series, I do want to talk about a couple of guys in the minors. One of them made his AAA debut yesterday on Saturday. We're recording this on Sunday, and that is Cam Sanders. His first start at AAA Iowa, 5 2/3, 2 hits, 1 run, 4 walks, which is high, but 9 strikeouts. And Brendan, Cam touching in the upper 90s. So this is someone who, if he's not on your radar, as we always say, like, he really should be. Like, this is a very impressive start to begin your AAA career. Anytime a guy gets, you know, graduates to a new level, shows up, is touching in the high 90s, yeah, and striking out 9 guys, like, that should be, yeah, sending some alerts.
And he's doing this with exceptional stuff, as you pointed out. The numbers, the strikeout numbers, he had a K per 9 in AA of 13.5. And then, of course, he goes in his first start against in Iowa and tears it up and continues to get those whiffs. So I'm thinking, you know, by the summer, we could have Cam Sanders getting starts. We could have, presumably with a high degree of confidence, Caleb Killian getting starts. Maybe Adber Alzolay comes back around the same timeline. Then it starts getting fun again, Corey. Stroman will be back here soon because of, you know, COVID issues. And Wade Miley is starting this week. The pitching for me is starting to get fun. And I was complaining about that for the first few weeks because of the injuries. And you want to see some intrigue by the current guys. And Justice Steele wasn't really doing it. And even he's looking better. So for the first time this season, I'm feeling optimistic about the starters. And I think hopefully by June or July, whether it be because they're selling off or whether it be because they just want to get these guys look, regardless of their record, it could start to get really fun, Corey.
Yeah, and so on Caleb Killian, of course, we've talked about him a lot, but just wanted to update you there. His last outing was on May 13th, 4 innings, 4 hits, just 1 run allowed, 2 walks, and 6 strikeouts. And there was a great tweet the next day from friend of the podcast. He was in the CHGO Cubs studios with Luke, Ryan, and Cody a couple weeks ago, Brian Smith from Bleacher Nation, and he just woke up on Saturday and tweeted, "Good morning. The Cubs' best pitching prospect leads AAA starters in ERA."
I like
and
that.
That would be one, Caleb Killian, with a 1.57 ERA.
Well,
now,
there we go.
as we've talked about, like, that was only four innings, so he's still putting it together, right? Like, putting together the whole package, and we've talked about it too. I know there's an urgency, like a desire to see him, but he's rounding into form, right? So be patient. It's going really well, but he's still got some boxes to check before we bring him up and we see him at beautiful historic Wrigley Field. Yeah. But it's never bad when your best pitching prospect leads AAA in ERA, and you also just graduated another guy to AAA, and he strikes out nine guys in his debut.
Yeah, things sound better, Corey. I think that will work, and I think that
you and me, we're known for being positive.
I know. Look at that. We're just,
that's what people know us for.
I know. We're beacons of optimism. Look at that. Okay, speaking of optimism, back to the major league team. So we have a three-game set against Pittsburgh at Wrigley Field starting Monday, 6:40 p.m. Central start time. This is the last time I complain about the start times because I know it's probably getting annoying, but 6:40 is ridiculous. Again, Wade Miley pitching, second start on the year, looking to have more success. Wasn't the greatest outing in his first start, but that's what you expect from a bizarre ramp up from the spring training and then coming back from injury. On Tuesday, 6:40 p.m. start time, the Cubs have not announced a starter as of Sunday evening, so just keep tabs on that and just backtracking a little bit. There's no Pittsburgh starter announced for Monday's game, but they did announce a starter for Tuesday's game, and Brubaker is pitching for Pittsburgh on the season is 0-3 with a 5.34 ERA. On Wednesday, the last game of the three-game set, 6:40 p.m. start time, Drew Smyly pitching for the Cubs. Smyly on the year having pretty good year. He's 1-4 with a 3.64 ERA. He'll be facing Keller for Pittsburgh, who's been roughed up the majority of the season. He's 0-5 with a 6.61 ERA. The Pittsburgh Pirates are 15-19. The Cubs are 13-20. And I will say the schedule for the Cubs appears to be pretty mild. So after the Pittsburgh series, they then play the Diamondbacks for a four-game set, still at Wrigley Field, so that traveling's not going to be a problem. Then after that four-game set against the Diamondbacks, they play Cincinnati. So you have in the next week and a half 11 games against teams that are in the cellar or should be in the cellar of their division by the season's end. So, you know, the 13-20, expectations are very low for this team right now. But in a weird world, an alternative reality, if the Cubs do come out and blow away these teams, you know, we could be talking about, to our surprise, perhaps like a more competitive Cubs team.
Yeah, I mean, look, just like keep it rolling, right? This was a really nice week. It's always tough to go on the road. The Padres going into that series were playing well. Arizona was playing well. And it's a tough swing to head out west. And you did really well. Took both of those series and just, yeah, keep it rolling. Like you're, as you said, Brendan, like it's not... The Cubs have gone through a portion of their schedule where the competition was very stiff, and that is not the case, at least to start this, stretch here with Pittsburgh and then Arizona and Cincinnati. So, yeah, just keep it rolling. Hopefully we can get some of these guys healthy. But
that's it.
For me, yeah, continuing to see more of what we saw this weekend from the starting rotation. Longer starts, quality starts, keeping the team in the game, and, you know, hopefully the offense can start to pick up the production a little bit so that the pitching staff isn't having to make two or three runs work every night. Yeah. But in a lot of occasions, they seem pretty up to the task. So let's just keep this rolling. Like, the start of the season has not been great on the whole and where the Cubs find themselves at this exact moment. But if you can come back home, take advantage of a weaker portion of the schedule and capitalize on hopefully some momentum that you just built by winning two series on the road. As you said, Brendan, like maybe we can make things at least a little more interesting and fun here for the Chicago Cubs. So that is what we have for you. I will be in studio with Luke Stuckmeyer tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Monday morning. Tonight, we will be doing pre- and post-game to start the series as the Cubs come back to Wrigley Field, so tune in for that. And as always, we appreciate your support for everything going on at CHGO. Of course, the live podcasts and shows on every team every day, post-game shows and premium written content over at allchgo.com. So go sign up and become a member at allchgo.com. Brendan and I will be back with you after the Cubs finish up this series on Wednesday evening. And as always, go Cubs.